Good morning, everybody, and welcome to day two of our Future of UK Cities event. I hope you all enjoyed day one, and we've got many treats lined up for you in day two, not least the panel that we're about to host. I'd like to thank our partners for this particular event, LCR, Avison Young, and Sheffield. We're talking all about public space, the importance of public space, and something that has become particularly important, I think, over the last few months, but was certainly important in the run-up to that as well. And I'm joined by a fantastic panel today who are here to share their thoughts. So I'm joined by Nalin Senivaratna, Director, City Centre Development at Sheffield, Deepa Joshi, Partner, Fletcher, Priest Architects and Mayor's Design Advocate, Rick Lawrence, Partnerships and Property Director, LCR, Nicola Rigby, Principal, Planning, Development and Regeneration at Avison Young, and Nick Shattuck, Chief Executive of Impact Capital Group. Thank you all so much for joining me. We've got 30 minutes, which is quite a short period of time to speak to all of you about your thoughts on this, and we've got some questions already lined up. But before we get going, I'd really love to hear your thoughts very briefly on the future and the importance of public space and why this is such an important subject for you. So Nalin, let's start with you on that.
Great, thanks Emily. I think clearly we've all experienced that during this pandemic we've come to love and value our open public spaces. I've seen just sort of honeypots around where I live in Sheffield. They've just attracted so many people during this pandemic period. I think for Sheffield, it's something that we've been doing really well as a city over many years. And we've seen our public open spaces as an investment rather than a cost. And it's set the scene for real estate development in the city. And it's also part of reinforcing our brand as the outdoor city, given that a third of our city area is in the Peak District National Park. So our aim is to link up city centre spaces, open spaces with the National Park. You can already pretty much walk from the city centre through into the Peak District through a green corridor, but we want to improve that. And recently we've been taking redundant highway space, and we've converted almost 2.5 acres of redundant road into green space. And recently I posted an article that showed us growing apples in the city centre. And when I took the photographs, just seeing the joy on people's faces, enjoying that open public space in the city centre was a great joy for me as well. So we're working towards delivering a new benchmark with walking and cycling infrastructure. And it's not only important during this COVID-19 period, but I think these spaces will help us shape the future of our urban centres and allow us to face the world confidently and successfully going forwards.
Thank you very much. I love the autumnal reference to apples growing as well. That's brilliant. Thank you. Deepa, your thoughts on that too?
Hi, yes. I think what we've been finding is it's really important to incorporate great landscape design and landscape design that integrates into the ground floor uses of the architecture so that it appeals to all types of people, all demographics of people, all ages of people. So it's fully diverse and fully inclusive. And not only that it's actually honed into the uses that we're proposing for the ground floor spaces. And sometimes we have to be a little bit creative about those uses. It's so important to provide great quality public space for all people to meet and to be able to be outside, but also be sheltered from the rain, to actually be able to sit, to be able to have and feel that they're those spaces are accessible, that those spaces are for them, whether they're teenagers, whether they're mums with kids, whether they're people from a different background that perhaps might not be able to fully assimilate with some of the offers that have been provided. So, you know, having more creativity, more imagination, working with really different agents. Some of the I've met some really interesting and creative commercial agents that actually have connections with different types of uses, so that those uses can become more affordable. And having that affordability of use means that those spaces around the public space can become more active, and having that activity means that we're actually populating our ground floor spaces with meaningful activities. So that's there's been, I think it was there before COVID, all of those points, but I think post COVID it's actually become even more meaningful, and really grabbing every bit of green space in the city particularly, and making it accessible for all, and giving other sort of other uses around it, so that people can feel that they have access, so that they feel that they're able to use those spaces to the maximum, because it really does add to the mental health benefits of people to be able to use those spaces.
Thank you very much. Nick, let's come to you next. Deepa was talking there about accessibility and inclusivity. How important is that going forward, and what can be done to ensure that those key elements are really honed in on when we're talking about public spaces?
Well, that was to me. Well, public realm is fundamental to regeneration, because regeneration is also a business, and a regenerator has to drive that total change in perception of a place to make it actually work. It is increasingly important to understand that you have to run these new places, these new urban villages, as businesses as well. And public realm will drive those relocation decisions that are so important to urban regeneration. Because the reason that people regenerate is to persuade people to come to places that they wouldn't think of going to before. Public realm is core to actually triggering that regeneration kicker that makes regeneration possible and allows it to form at the same rate as developing in core areas. But I think that, probably answering your question, in detail, in a post-COVID world, it's just really good business, and people are no longer going to accept small amenity areas that the minimum legal is the acceptable, and you have to change the way you do real estate development and regeneration going forward. It is going to be a new way. It's going to be about wellness. It's going to be about outside exercise. It's going to be about areas where people can rest and recuperate during stressful days. It's incumbent on regenerators to leave the place as a better place than you found, and that's absolutely core to our philosophy, and which is why we're investing in so much more public realm than probably most other developers.
Thank you very much. Nicola, I want to come to you now on that, and then to Rick after that. So Nicola, your thoughts on that? There's a lot of mention, of course, around regeneration there.
Yeah, I mean, it's always easier going towards the end because you can just say everything that's been said. I agree entirely with, and it's true here more than ever. I mean, I think Nick just touched on a really important point that certainly we put at the forefront of all the advice that we give. It's people that make places successful. And, before COVID, people vote with their feet. They choose places that they enjoy being within, environments that they feel safe, where there's activity and vibrancy and an experience that they want to be part of. I think in a post-COVID world, clearly a lot of those considerations have just become even more important. And in particular, the points around safety, safety, security, and one eye obviously on proximity and public health considerations. So for us, in terms of the work that we do, I think Nick has absolutely articulated it very well. The advice that we give our clients, whether developers, asset owners, or otherwise, it's all about people making the choice to come to your space and the commercial benefits of doing so. I think the other point I would make, and hopefully this will come through in the discussion that we have subsequently, it's very important to us, again, in the advice that we give, that the quality of that public realm and landscape offer within urban centres isn't just a moment in time. We have to think about the long-term management of those spaces and the stewardship of those spaces to make sure that they continue to function in the way that is intended and is embraced indeed by people in the long term, rather than just in the moment at which the development or the place becomes live.
Thank you very much. And Rick, I'd love to hear your thoughts on what we've heard from everybody else, but also in that point that Nicola just made about this not just being a moment in time, so important to have longevity built in. I'd love to get your thoughts on that as well.
Yes, indeed. I mean, I'd say I think a lot of it's been said already, but I think from LCR's point of view, we're quite uniquely placed in terms of we're a government owned body, and we do a lot of regeneration on our own land. So we're involved with the King's Cross regeneration with Argent, and we're involved with Lendlease at Stratford, and we're involved with UNI up in Mayfield. So some big city centre sites. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, although COVID has come along, the public space has always been there. And I think that, you know, with the likes of our scheme up in Manchester, we've got a 24-acre site just south of Piccadilly Station, and we are creating a new public park, a 6.5-acre public park in that scheme. And, you know, this is the first public park in Manchester for 100 years, and that thought has been around for a long time and wasn't necessarily linked to COVID, but has obviously come up to the fore because of COVID in terms of what this park will offer. And I think that, you know, that park will create urban squares, it'll create open green areas, adventure play areas, it'll have running and cycling and walking routes, and then quiet areas around the river that goes through. So I think it's just very important that, you know, someone at LCR is able to get involved with some big sites in city centres and have that influence, and use some of the track record we've got to bring this whole public space agenda up to the fore. So yes, definitely, it's definitely the way forward.
Fantastic. And there's a couple of things that came out of what you guys are all talking about there that I really want to sort of open up to everybody to discuss. One of them is sort of continuing Nicola's point, which I know that Rick just touched on there as well, about this longevity and being so careful of, you know, moments in time and making sure that whatever is created and whatever is continued to be created is in it for the long haul. And the other thing I wanted to talk about was something that Nick mentioned, which is, you know, around this kind of focus and investment on public spaces. And are we moving into, or maybe I'm being unfair, have we already moved into a place in the industry where there is more of an understanding among developers and investors of just how important this stuff is? And it's not just about your traditional bricks and mortar. So those are the two things I want to touch on, and then we'll come to some questions from our audience. So Nalin, can we come back to you on those two points, longevity and investment and investability of public spaces? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think in terms of longevity, the key there is quality. It's the design of the space and the quality of the space. If you look at our successful Victorian parks, which was, you know, the last time that this country invested heavily in those public spaces, and when you think about it, it was all about public health at the time. That was the main driver. But they were designed in such a way that they're still true to their form today. And that's the critical aspect of getting it right this time round, that we design those places that are effectively timeless going forwards. So I think that's the key point there. And I think we've learnt in the city of Sheffield how important that quality aspect is, getting the planting right, using natural materials is, you know, and things that are low maintenance as well, that don't cost us a fortune in maintaining, so the quality standards can be achieved relatively easily. So that's a key point there. I think in terms of investment, as I said in my sort of opening remarks, we've found that investing in the public realm has actually set the scene for real estate development, especially for a city like Sheffield, going through a resurgence, a post-industrial renaissance. the quality of the public realm has been that scene setter for investment. And we're seeing it now with, you know, most of my day job is with our Heart of the City scheme. We're also building a new pocket park through the government funding, just as Mayfield has received. And what we're finding is that that's now actually turning on occupiers who think, right, this is a really interesting place to be, a really nice place to be. So with the occupiers being more becoming interested, ultimately that can drive the investment side. So we're seeing that grow equally with food and beverage and the importance of being able to spill out into open space. So it's very much becoming part of that investment decision now, creating that quality space.
Thank you very much. And Deepa, the same question to you. You know, this idea of how important it is to focus on longevity and the investment argument as well.
Yeah, so one of the great philosophies with buildings is loose fit, long life. So, you know, if you've got a building that can be repurposed, we've got actually quite a number of projects that we've done in London that are existing buildings that were coming to the end of their sort of useful life as rentable assets for commercial, for instance. There's one in Bishopsgate, there's one in Whitechapel. We took those buildings and we opened them up to the public realm and really improved that threshold between outdoors and indoors and added some really exciting ground floor uses. And actually some of that was connected. So the future tenants were really excited about the prospect of moving into that building because we had opened up those buildings to this passing traffic and to creating the spaces in between the building where people could sit, people could wait, people could linger, and that draw in passers-by. So this idea that we're actually adding to the public realm by repurposing these existing buildings, and that can happen everywhere. And I think we can see those little pockets all over the city where we can make those small improvements, and people's day-to-day life becomes better because they have got a nice, comfortable, sheltered, active, safe, secure place to sort of sit and eat their lunch or sit and dwell and sit and take stock of their surroundings. Likewise, in residential, we're now seeing a move towards actually integrating public spaces into the knitting them into the design of the residential. I'm doing a large scheme in Dublin where the whole scheme is based around a master plan of interlinked green routes, and those green routes are walkable, they're cyclable, they're runnable, and they also include these little pocket parks where people can stop and take stock and linger and play and enjoy the really lush and extremely valuable landscaping that we're providing for the well-being of all.
Thank you very much. Now, Nicola, you were the one who first sort of mentioned this idea of longevity and how important it is, and how it would be, you know, it would be something that you'd like to sort of see us all discuss on this chat. So I want to speak to Rick and Nick in a minute about their thoughts on it in a bit more detail. But if you were to go into a bit more detail from your perspective, is that idea of avoiding that moment in time trap, what would you say?
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of the advice that we give and the projects that we're involved in, as a very sort of practical exercise, what we try and do is engage management in the conversation as early as possible. And historically, management, whether that be asset managers within the client base or advisors from within our organisation, haven't really featured in design groups. So when we assemble design teams to work on projects, they haven't historically been in the room. But increasingly, that's just becoming more and more important. So when you get into designing the concept of major public realm, major landscaping within, particularly within urban centres, but actually across all types of development, we see it as increasingly important to have the right people in the room. And in the context of The materiality, the choices that we're making around design materials, really simple things like ensuring that there's water sources in place early in the design process if you're going to have significant landscaping within urban areas, early consideration of things like service charge arrangements, whether you're going to progress with estate charges, with a ground rent structure, you know, ensuring that at conceptual stage, we're building that understanding of long-term management into the process we see as increasingly important. I think in particular where, you know, these ideas at concept stage are often taken to the community. And I think Mayfield in Manchester, which has already been mentioned, is a really good example of this, where the community can really take hold of something and it means a lot to them. And at that point, we're making very significant commitments through the development process that we have to be sure that we can deliver, but that also will be valuable in the long term from a place perspective. So from a very practical perspective, we would always encourage early engagement of management in that design process to ensure that we aren't overcommitting and that we're designing properly outset.
Thank you very much. Now, we're sort of, walking the fine line between sort of wanting to hear as much from you guys as possible on this conversation and also leaving enough time for the questions that we've got from the audience. So what I'm going to do is, Rick and Nick, I think we did touch on some of those investment points a bit earlier. If anybody wants more information on that, I'm sure that they'd be more than happy to give more information. But I'm going to start with some of the questions now. So, Nick, let me come to you first with this question. From Sarah Laws, Touchstone Corporate Property Services Limited. How are we building more multi-purpose amenities into our public space? That's something which has been touched on sort of briefly already in this discussion, but can we go into a bit more detail on that?
I believe it's an absolute imperative. And part of our ethos is that our stewardship will win more deals and more partnerships. Arrangements, generation authorities. So we need to demonstrate that we believe what we say. how does that work? Well, if you're creating public realm, then you need to give it a multifaceted aspect as well. You need to look carefully at the wellness. How can you build exercise into that space? How can you build full accessibility into that space. Planting needs to deal with not only noise attenuation but also carbon capture. In the future, going forward, we regard a fundamental that all the public realm spaces should be fully Wi-Fi enabled. Because that is what is going to swell the dwell time, which is going to make the public realm actually work. It's a given that you have to ensure sufficient biodiversity as well. But then the other themes are sound, lighting, reasons for people to stay, believe that their dwell time is rest and recuperation time. But you also need to be building into your public realm now new transport, new ways to park, charge your cars, scooters, which you know, are going to happen, driverless vehicles, garden cities, and Ipswich One. We have to deliver a public realm and an infrastructure that will work for the next 100 years. There have been various aspects, I think, which we haven't quite touched on yet about the future of retail in these areas. Retail pop-ups is the future. People aren't going to sign 25-year leases anymore. We've got to make space in our public realm for the disruptors, and whether that's local food, local farmers markets, celebrity chefs coming for a while. But also craft. So again, it comes back down to this point. You know, it's just going to be good business, and increasingly, unless you deliver this public realm, you won't get the deals. You won't get the planning consent. My last point is that service charge is a really difficult thing to manage in this, and you need to convince the retailers and the office occupiers that you are delivering a space but your public realm and its quality is what's going to move your values and move your rents and move the turnover for your clients, who are the retailers and the office occupiers.
Thank you very much. That's a great answer. If we had more time, I'd love to get other people's opinions on it, but we've got more questions coming through. So, Rick, there's a question here for you. It's from Christopher Arthur, the Spaces Between Limited. How can we better value the benefits of our public spaces so that they form a greater part of the appraisal process?
Yes, I think, again, LCR is fairly uniquely placed in terms of we're a government organisation and we work with government, lots of public land holders such as Network Rail, where we're working in collaboration. And where we, the way we look at it is we're generating homes and jobs and public value. So our appraisal won't just purely look at the commercial viability of a station or a site, but we'll look wider than that. The public value will take into account public spaces, social value, the value that's going to generate for communities and citizens, and the environmental value, how we can deliver resilient, sustainable places to live and work, and then the economic value, what are the jobs and the business activities that are generated from the promotion of the work we do with the likes of Network Rail. And I think, you know, we're in a unique position where we can take that wider view and not purely look at it as a developer. We got this wider vision to deliver tens of thousands of homes over the next 10 years. That's our strategy. And public value of £7 billion and jobs that come with that. And I think, you know, in that position of with that agenda and that business model, we can take the public spaces into account and appraise it. And you know, when you're looking at a station with Network Rail, obviously they own the land within the red line, but we can look outside the red line and assess you know, where it may be a local authority car park that we can buy in or partner with them, or third party land. And it's having that holistic view. And but the point is that it's public value that we focus on rather than the usual commercial viability. And in that, we certainly take into account the value of public spaces.
Thank you very much. We've got about 3 minutes left. So we have a question here from Tanya Love from Faulkner Browns, which is around activating ground floor of high streets and city centres, encouraging landlords to give space over to markets, pop-ups, startups in the short term. And that's a fantastic question, but I feel like Nick did touch on a few elements of that. So thank you so much for that question, Tanya. I hope you feel like it's been answered in part. Carol Bryant from Thameside Metropolitan Borough Council wants to know how we meet the challenge of providing public space for all users. So Deepa, I want to come to you on this one, and I've got two final questions for Nalan and Nicola, and then we should wrap up on time if we're lucky. So Deepa, that question around how to meet the challenge of providing public space for everybody, just a short answer if you don't mind.
I think it's just about diversifying the offer and understanding that not everyone relates to the usual types of offers that you might get on those spaces. So think about people who might want to bring their own food and eat it, or in that public space. Think about people who, you know, how are they getting there? Are they and how old are they? Are they youngsters? Are they going to be seen as a threat, or are they going to have somewhere nice to be able to hang out together? Because every different age and diversity of society has a slightly different need, and if there's a query about what those are, engage with your local community and find out what those communities are that are actually local to your project, and ask them and see what they would like to see in their space, to give them ownership of that civic space. And if they do feel that community ownership, you'll be building a better community and a better public space for all.
Thank you very much. So Nalan, quick question for you, 30 seconds if you don't mind on it, from Steve Hansen, VOA. Do you see the power of public spaces receiving more prominence in the future following the COVID-19 situation? I think we've touched on this quite a lot, but just a very quick roundup answer on that would be fantastic. Are we going to see more prominence of these public spaces going forward?
I think we should see more prominence of these spaces going forwards, and effectively they should be classified as essential infrastructure, in my opinion. And how we target and focus the use of either Section 106 contributions or community infrastructure levy contributions, I think is going to be really important. We've already seen how we've had to, through COVID-19, we've adapted highways, or you know, we've made loads of adaptations to existing space. So let's make sure we get it right going forwards and give public spaces that proper prominence, and as I say, classify them as essential infrastructure. That's the way forward for me on that one.
Thank you very much. And finally, Stefan Dowers for our Creative Arts wants to know how we define cultural value within new developments. Nicola, 20 seconds on that. I think we've just about made it.
Cultural value. Culture has a value in a traditional sense of the word. You know, commercial entities that deliver culture have to have business cases that underpin them. So don't forget that they can be traditional value generators. But I think we've got to get into a space where we see cultural value and cultural uses as being a core part of our delivery of social value and a driver of footfall. So I think in terms of how you capture that value within a development sense, I think there will always need to be a traditional, you know, definition of commercial return based on cultural investment. But we also need to remember that social value return and footfall driver as part of that conversation as well.
Thank you so much. I think we just about managed to sort of, you know, fly through just on the half an hour mark. It's a very short space of time, particularly for a large and very esteemed panel. Thank you all so much for joining me today. It's been a fantastic conversation and one that's made me want to just get out there and spend as much time in our public spaces as possible. Thank you to all of our viewers and audience as well. And for everybody else, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the EG Property Podcast. We hope you found the content insightful and helpful. If you'd like more of the same and to keep up with all the latest news, views, analysis and research that the EG Group has to provide, be sure to sign up to all of our property podcasts and subscribe to Radius Data Exchange for unlimited access to all of our content and comprehensive commercial real estate data.